to Illusion of Difference, I as Creator, with your host, Elondis Lake. Our search for unity starts within. Our quest for safety starts within. Once we understand the role difference plays when building community, we can release what we are holding back. We can learn from life's challenges. We can become who we are meant to be.
Hello, hello. This is Elondis, and I am the host for Illusion of Difference. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dave, and we're going to talk about something that is sad. I think it's very sad. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, Elondis.
How you doing?
I think I'm doing okay, but there's a bunch of stuff going through my head as far as the whole Afghanistan thing goes.
Where you want to start? Hey, one thing I want to do is start with when you were over in Vietnam. It was the war was from the 50s into the 70s, 1955 to 75. So put us where you were in that time frame.
Well, actually, I didn't join the military until after Vietnam was done.
Okay.
But I got to talk to a lot of people that had been through that whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Because I went in after Saigon fell and everything like that, but there were still a lot of military folks that had been involved in all that. And there was a huge feeling of failure and betrayal and abandonment, because a lot of the people in Vietnam that had been helping the U.S. were stuck there when we left. You know, everybody remembers the big evacuation and all that, but that was really just a drop in the bucket for the folks that we left behind.
Yeah, that was like the beginning of what they ended up with, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the people were so far back in some of the areas of Vietnam that they literally couldn't get to any place to get out, which is why they had people on boats that were sailing out of Vietnam for, I think it was 6 months, to maybe even years afterwards, trying to escape communism and the fact that they were being persecuted for having collaborated with the U.S. government.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, the government's got a long history of abandoning people that have helped them out.
Yeah.
Not just in Vietnam, but also through the, what was the name of the folks in Iraq that we abandoned, the Kurds.
And
you know, it's the people that helped out in Panama that we walked away from.
Yeah.
You know, even after we won the Panamanian conflict. So the U.S. government really much pretty does suck at helping people that help us.
It certainly seems that way, for sure. Especially if you just take a glance back at history. Let's move into what's going on. Difficult to just get the news just to watch it, because it's so, and to me it's upsetting, and it brings back what I saw as a young child in the news when Vietnam, when Saigon fell. It brings those feelings back, not to the extent that it was initially, but I'm reminded of how that felt in me. And it was not a good thing to see. And then you see now I look at these people who, again, helped our country do what it said it needed to do and wanted to do, and in the guise of helping, you know, people be free. And now they're begging to get on a plane and begging to and hiding in their houses because they're afraid of what's going to happen because of the retaliation. So I'm wondering what you're thinking now or even feeling, because Vietnam was a huge thing that happened, and we're still recovering from the trauma that occurred just because we were involved vicariously or actually. So I really wanted to talk with someone who was over there around that time, and you are one of those people. So I want to hear from you. I want to hear what's going on.
Well, you may notice my voice cracking once in a while today. Mm-hmm. Because I got hit with a hammer at work 2 days ago. One of the ladies came in and said that her son had been in the Army, had gone to Afghanistan, had gone to Iraq, and one of his friends had been concerned about him becoming one of the 22 veterans daily that commit suicide.
Yeah.
And she found out that friend, when he heard that Afghanistan had fallen, took his own life.
Yeah.
So,
just take your time.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different aspects that a lot of people may not even realize. Because all of those guys that went over there, lost limbs, got head injuries, soft limbs die. Soft limbs get injured. They're going to be feeling this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wasn't there in this entire conflict. I did get involved in Desert Storm 1. Marginally, not anything to brag about or complain about or anything like that. But I did lose at least one airplane over there and some 17 people that were stationed on my base. And to think that, you know, all these guys are going to be sitting around going, "We failed." That's not true. They didn't fail.
No.
They went there for a job. They did their job. They did it to the best of their ability. And I'm sure if their heads are right, they're going to see that as, you know, I did my job. I was a tool for the military. I was a tool for the government. I did what I had to do. I did what I was supposed to do. I succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to internalize the fact that this government failed.
And in such
a
big way.
To make a plan. Yeah, to make a plan, to make a transition. You know, and there's a bunch of different ways you can look at this thing. You know, I saw something on YouTube today that somebody said, yeah, the mission was to go over there and deny Afghanistan to the terrorists. And that was done in the first year and a half. But then somebody figured out there was a way to make a profit off of this thing, whether it was monetarily or politically, and they drug it out for 20 years. And that failure belongs to the people at the top of the government and the capitalists that pushed that whole thing off on it. And, I laughed when I saw somebody put something on the news that Afghanistan has got a ton of minerals that the world needs.
Yeah, that's true. And I saw that. Yeah.
And they're already trying to figure out how they're going to suck up the Taliban and get to that.
Mm-hmm.
China and Russia have already established pretty much diplomatic relationships with the Taliban. Guess what they're going for?
Yeah.
So, and that's like from a logistical point of view, that perfectly makes sense. From a humanistic point of view, what a bunch of selfish folks.
Yeah.
And I said folks because the word I want to use is not necessarily appropriate to podcasting. But, with everything else going on, there's people in Afghanistan that are scared. Looking at, possibly end of life stuff.
Some people have already, from what I can gather from what I have, they've already at least been threatened. There are a lot of people who are really afraid of what's going to happen to them.
It all started from my end when I saw the video of the 22 Afghan commandos that surrendered and were summarily executed. Now, of course, Taliban says that that's all fake. And I have no idea. I haven't researched it. I haven't taken a look at it. I got no clue. But it's not outside the realm of possibility that, they shot at us, they surrendered, we shot them. Have a nice day. That's the way it goes in war.
Yep.
And, people getting their doors knocked on saying, you collaborated, come with us. It's a very real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Taliban says that, we've got amnesty and everybody's going to be okay. But, in any conflict, there's going to be certain hotheads someplace that bear a grudge.
Yeah.
And they may take matters into their own hands. And they may pay for it later, but the bottom line is, once you shoot somebody, they're pretty much shot.
Yeah.
There's no court in the land that can now say, well, take back that bullet. And, I'm sure in Afghanistan, there's people going, yeah, we failed. And I've seen the thing on the news about Ghani supposedly left with millions of dollars cash. And, of course, the UAE accepted him on humanitarian terms, which in my mind says he paid his way in. Mm-hmm. There's going to be so many feelings and so many stories from the top echelons all the way down to, the guy that was emptying the garbage in the offices. At the end of the day, and everybody in between. People were begging at the front gates, hoping to get a candy bar for their kids.
Yeah.
And those are the stories that I don't think anybody's going to be paying any attention to because it's not going to get any sound bites on Fox or CNN.
And once eventually there are people over there from covering what's going on now as best they can. But eventually they'll be gone. They'll go back home, hopefully.
Yeah.
Back to the U.S., back to Europe, wherever. And that is what people are so afraid of who were allies in their own country. They're afraid of what's going to happen after. Not right now. We can point and say, well, they're just riding around in jeeps and things, and saying death to America. But yeah, they're all right. Yeah, they have some of our guns, that we left behind because we're in a hurry to leave, I guess. Okay. That's okay. Everything will be fine. And they said it would be. Listen, you can look on the news, and we have them on video saying that everything's okay and women are safe and blah, blah, blah. The thing about it is that's the same thing that the U.S. is still saying, but even said before when people were coming in Afghanistan to help change things, to help make their lives better. They were saying the same thing. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. And now you can, what I have seen and looked at is you have the Taliban telling the world, whoever's listening, and the people who are so afraid and in such jeopardy that everything's okay, don't worry. And you have the U.S. over here, we're in control. We know what we're doing. We're not going to just cut and run. Oh, well, maybe we should send some more troops back in there because maybe we got out a little too soon. Oh, and we don't have planes we can get out. You're getting the same message from both sides. And that is crazy.
Yeah. And see, that's one of the interesting things about Afghanistan, copy to being a bit of a historical buff.
Okay. That's okay. That's good.
And historically, Afghanistan is a culture that cannot be conquered. The Khan family, as in the Mongols, were the only people that held on to any holdings in Afghanistan for decades. And did so successfully because Genghis walked in there and told every third soldier that they were going to convert to Islam and take an Afghani wife. In other words, he adopted the culture so that they could, you know, coexist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said it when the Russians went into Afghanistan, it's like, somebody has not been reading their history books. Afghanistan has been at war with itself since well before Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
Now, in case anybody doesn't understand, that's prehistorical type stuff. That's before Jesus and shit.
I like what
and the fact that.
That's before Jesus.
And the fact that, you know,
just in case you didn't get that.
You know, and in case anybody doesn't understand that, there are so many different cultures in Afghanistan that they don't have just one language.
Yeah.
They've
right.
got a tribal system. They've got a cultural system. They've got religious undertones between the Shias and the Sunnis and God knows how many other different places. And the fact that the U.S. has enough hubris to think that we can go in there and in a mere decade or two change things to a democracy and a capitalist society based on U.S. training when we took away the drones, we took away the air power, we took away the base. We took away the supply stations, and then we wonder how come they couldn't hold on to the country.
Yeah.
Because the Afghanis despise an occupier. They've culturally, historically, they've never liked the fact that somebody comes in there and thinks that they're in charge.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable.
The Afghanis, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's human nature. But the Afghanis have taken that to a fine art. And they've been doing this, you know, Alexander the Great, the Mongols, the Turks, the Iranians, the Persians. Nobody's held on to Afghanistan for very long because that's the Afghani culture. You're not one of us. therefore you're against us. And as soon as we see a chance to put you to the curb, yep, there you go, your teeth. And, you know, that's, I was enlisted in the military, but I was taught very early on that if you want to learn anything about a culture, you need to take a look at it historically and see what they've done in the past and what they're going to do next.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, whether it was America, England, Germany, Russia, even China. Historically, we tend to repeat lessons ad nauseum. And the ones that pay for it, which, you know, really hits my heart hard, are the ground pounders, the grunts.
Yeah. Yeah,
the people that go in there and deal with the people one-on-one. And whether that's, you know, handing a kid a candy bar or being shot at and shooting back. The government doesn't suffer these wounds. They get embarrassed.
They should be embarrassed anyway, but what they do is put a spin on it. Because that's what makes politicians politicians. They know how to spin things to look one way or the other, you know? And you said something that I want to pull out. You said a lot of stuff. This one in particular I want to pull out when you said that Afghanistan has been at war with itself. And then there's another common denominator, because we can say the same thing about this country. We are still at war with ourselves and have been from day one. And we're in between two extremes, but they're not really. They're the same. They're the same. And we're in the middle. Most of us are in the middle, trying to figure it out and live our lives and be safe and have a place where we can feel comfortable and proud about where we are and raise our families. And that's also a universal thing. We have the two extremes that this country and Afghanistan right now represent. And then you have everybody else in the middle just trying to live and trying to make sense out of what's going on. I can't imagine what it would feel like to go over and fight and put your life on the line like that and then watch what's happening on the news now and what's happening in that country now. I can't imagine what that feels like. I know what it feels like for me just knowing that that's what happened, but to go over there, literally lose limb, come back completely changed in ways that you aren't going to know until you get back home and feel safe and stuff starts coming up. And then
that's one of the misconceptions a lot of people have. And I'm not busting bad on you, but I'm just pointing something out. When you go into a situation like that, even if you don't lose a limb, even if you never get shot at, even if you don't get involved in interpersonal combat, you come back changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, some of the worst scars I've seen in the military and some contractors, I want to throw those in there too, are the fact that, you know, I know a guy, he worked for Blackwater. He had nothing to do with some of the shootings that went on over there, came back, and just the fact that people knew he'd been in Blackwater changed the way they treated him and changed the way he reacted to other people, because now you got to be on guard. And one of the things about being at war, I learned this very early. So this is like second nature to me. There is no such thing as safety. There are degrees of safety. But as long as airplanes can fall out of the sky or somebody can decide to just whack you on the side of the head walking down a sidewalk, there's no safety. Possible, but there's no safety.
Yeah,
when you go into a combat zone and you realize that once a bullet's released, it's going to land someplace. And a lot of people come back from combat zones of the military or even sometimes, you know, south side of Chicago, east side of St. Louis. You know, if somebody decides to throw a target on your back, there's really not much you can do. And that haunts a lot of people. Now, like I said, I learned this way early because I grew up in a very interesting family and dynamic and all that. But when you've gone through your entire life thinking that everything is lollipops and roses, and then you suddenly become aware that, you know, there are predators and victims that turn into predators and predators that turn into victims, and the government's going to take advantage of you just because you're warm and breathing and they need you to do something. It changes your entire mindset. And, you know, the people that come back with obvious physical scars, those guys are easy to pick out. Somebody in a wheelchair, how'd you lose your legs? Somebody standing on a street corner with a paper bag, you may not have any idea what his scars look like or what her scars look like.
That's true.
And, you know, and you're right. You know, this, we've been at war with ourselves for decades. You know, and one of the things that I really find disgusting about the human race, and I'd love to say it's just the U.S., but we've got in the habit of we need somebody else to do this. When America decided that we needed cheap farm labor, we didn't import workers from Mexico. We went to Africa and picked up a bunch of people that we could control. That was called slavery. And nowadays, when there's a problem, they pass a law, which doesn't do a damn thing, because whatever they were doing in the first place is already illegal, but now we're going to make a law making it tougher. You know, and that's one of the things, you know, and I find myself falling victim to it as well, you know, because it's like somebody should do something. Well, you know, sometimes I just got to tell myself, pull on your big boy pants and fix it. You know, go ahead and get your fingers dirty. Get in there, wash dishes, change the oil on your car, change the flat tire, whatever it is.
Change the diaper.
Oh, God, don't make me gag. Anyway.
I have the same reaction.
You know, and that's pretty much, you know, pun intended. Sometimes you just got to get your hands shitty. And you get dirty and, you know,
and
you're going to get
yourself
the diaper changed.
To wash off.
You know, you're going to get the diaper changed. Hopefully you don't puke on the kid, but, you know, that washes off too. And, you know, with everything else going on, you know, and and sometimes, you know, the reason I kind of like your podcast, because it's like, sometimes we just got to get right down into feeling. Right into my experiences versus somebody else. You know, and the more we share being human, the less we can put somebody else in a box and say, well, I'm white, you're black, I'm Christian, you're Muslim, I'm male, you're female. And just realize that, you know, this is an individual.
Yeah.
This is a person. And I don't have to know everything about them, but I know that I need to treat them like a person,
mm-hmm.
not an it. And until the entire human race builds that concept, I mean, it's one of the things I know about Afghanistan, and seeing how we're going to bounce on that. They have a tradition over there. If you walk up to somebody's house and ask for sanctuary, they give it to you.
Mm.
And the Russians used it. The Canadians used it. If you walk up to a house and, you know, you're hurting, you're hungry, you're thirsty, and you ask for sanctuary, it's their custom. You have to give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that are coming after them, you have to explain to them, look, he asked for sanctuary. Don't defame my honor by causing any harm to these people.
Mm.
You need to go to the next ridge over and wait until they come back out because I've given them sanctuary. Respect me, please.
Mm.
And they do that. And that's one of the things that how barbaric they are, they still had manners.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of those things that when you stop and think about it, I wish we had the same thing. You know, if I have a flat tire and I walk up the house and say, Hi, I got a flat tire and I need help. Sure, no problem. But in this society, it would be more like, thanks for knocking on my door, but go call AAA.
Yeah, or not answer. I don't know that person. I'm not going to open the door. I don't know what they want. But we do tell ourselves that we live that way too. And it's through religion, Christianity, and all of that. I'm not going to use the word that pops in my head, but just say malarkey. I'll say malarkey. Malarkey, because
okay.
People don't live by it. They do use it. They use
yeah.
it.
Well, that's one of the fun things about, you know, I love the politics and the media because they espouse a lot of concepts, but they don't follow through.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Christians that talk all about the teachings of Christ. And I'm not a Christian, so I feel like I can probably break bad on them a little bit. But then they discriminate. You know, you can't come in here because you're black. Or we can't help you because you're blank. And that's not the original teachings of Christ or even Muhammad. It's like, no, when you see somebody that needs help, you help them, period. Doesn't matter where they're from. But
that's
again,
true,
you know, it's easy to talk out of the side of your face when you're talking to your peers. But when you're talking to somebody that's a little bit different, then you find the fear and you don't want to react or you don't want to act.
Hmm.
And that's probably a very human Christians or American or male or female or anything like that, because fear tends to freeze people.
That's true. And I think the biggest fear we have is inside ourselves. In our heads, we're afraid of what might happen or what is happening. A lot of times we're living with fear, other people's fear. And they're afraid of what's happening behind closed doors or things like that. They're afraid it's going to come to light or fear that they're going to be exposed for who they're not or who they are, you know?
Yeah. Or even the fact that they may lose something.
That too. Yeah. It's fear that's internal. And we don't know about it. We're interacting with one another. But how often do we sit and say, you know, I'm a little worried about XYZ. And if we do, a lot of us will say, oh, come on, let's talk about something else. Come on, have a drink or whatever, you know? So we have, as a species, we have boxed ourselves into this madness, because that's what it looks like and feels like. It looks, you don't know what's true and what isn't. You don't know what's real and what's not. Right?
Right.
Through our fear. We're afraid, and we don't have an outlet for it. So it erupts. It erupts in child abuse. It erupts in war. It erupts this internal fear that we have, regardless of where it comes from or how we make sense out of it, into these devastating events that cause even more fear. And I don't know what's going on or what's going to happen. We're getting real close to, we're running out of places to put our fear and act out. We're literally running out of those places.
And see, that's one of the things that I'm going to say something very quick that a lot of people are probably going to really get disgusted about. But the human being is a balloon. And the more we suppress and internalize and pressurize, whether it's the fear or the greed or the emotional pain or whatever, a human being can only internalize so much before they pop.
Yep.
And, you know, They talk about gun control, but the reality is we've seen people do the same thing with knives and cars and bombs and child abuse and alcoholism and addiction. And once those pop, they lose all reason.
Yeah.
And as a human race, we need to find a way to vent off some of this pressure and decrease that. Now, I'm going to say, I grew up in the John Wayne generation. I'll admit that. And men didn't have feelings. They didn't show their feelings unless they were angry. Men were rough and tough and didn't take shit off of anybody. Eventually, that turned into a cheap toilet paper joke.
It did.
but the reality is that, you know, you can swallow this stuff and hold it in and keep it going, and internally the pressure builds, and eventually that's got to come out somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people see it coming out as stomach problems, cancer, alcoholism, addiction, isolation. They act out sexually on so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just pop a nut and go out and start shooting people. Or they run over people with a vehicle.
Or they kick the dog.
Or they start a fire. All different sorts of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really need, instead of gun laws or more laws or anything like that, is, you know, if we just started working on respect and manners, and the ability to hear people and say, you know, I don't want to hear what you got to say, but I got to hear what you got to say, because I don't want you to pop a cork and go down and set the school on fire. You know, and it's kind of like that diaper joke you talked about. You know, somebody somewhere's got to do this. And some of us, I know a lot of people have worked in human services, and sometimes the most aggro, dysfunctional, mentally health impacted person in the world if you just sit down and talk to them and listen to them for more than 20 minutes, they become so much more human.
Yeah, they do. I learned that working on the psych floor as a chaplain. A lot of my colleagues, not all, but a lot of them were terrified of going on the floor. They would avoid it like the plague. And I figured out, I'll go. I was new. fine, I'll go. And it was scary. And part of what needs to happen is we need to be able to feel vulnerable, because when the door locks behind you, it was locked. It wasn't a area that they could come and go. It was you locked, and you had to you had to get in and out, be let in and out, and that's a big thing when you think about it. And I'm the type of person that I've gotten in a lot of trouble this way, though. if I see something like that, I'll go back and say, I get curious. Why did I have that? I know the obvious things, but in the process, I realized that we all have a little bit of crazy in us, and we can connect with that. We can connect with that with each other if we're not afraid and if we're safe. Yeah, I'm not saying that we go out there and find the guy who's beating his head on the sidewalk and talking to himself and say, "Hey, what's going on? How you doing? Want to have a cup of coffee?" No, that's not what I'm saying. But I am saying stretch yourself, keep yourself safe, but stretch as well, and reach out to somebody that makes you feel a little uncomfortable and you don't know why. I've had some conversations with people who I never thought I would have, looking at them from one, just outside, just seeing the outside of the person. A lot of people are very, very deep people, but you don't know it, because we're always focusing on the race, the gender, the color, the kind of hair, the age. That's what we focus on. And that's part of the problem, I think. That's a big part of the problem. We don't see each other as anything other than different items that we have decided we're going to let exist or claim or name or whatever. I don't know how you go about that. But
well, and that's part of the human condition, as I have discovered quite several times, many times, that it's a human condition to look at somebody and automatically put them in a box. You're male, you're female, you're black, you're white, you're not from this country, you're not from that country. And as soon as we make that assumption, some of the most intelligent people I've worked with were barefoot and had very little clothing on, but they could take you through the highlands of the Amazonian headwaters and show you things that you just never even conceived of. And then I've seen people that were so educated that they couldn't figure out how to tie their shoes, so they had Velcro on them.
Yeah.
PhDs have got multiple degrees, and they can't find their belt buckle. So it's like one of the things that I had to really push through my head is, when I meet somebody, it's almost more like I got to vacuum my mind out and go, okay, I want you to tell me who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, some of the most interesting conversations that I've ever had were with somebody that I would never have wanted to even be seen with.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And you learn a lot about yourself at the same time. You do.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you a question while I have you. I want to ask you a question. You said that we both agree that we focus on boxes, places where we put each other and ourselves. So I'm wondering if that's part of the human condition, or is that, and I don't have an answer, or is that a product of being brought into a society where you're taught, the only way you're taught from the cradle up is how to recognize reality, for lack of a better word, by differentiating it from other parts. In other words, how to recognize red by saying it's not blue, or blue by saying it's not red, or male by saying it's not a female, this is a male. I'm wondering if that contributes, and what would it be like if we didn't have to do that? Think of a little kid, a baby, and they're looking around and like, ooh, that kind of thing. They don't know shit from Shinola. They don't know any of that. They just know what's going on. You know, they see something and they're curious, usually.
I'm going to counter that by saying it's not just human. I think it is a product of upbringing and mimicking those around you, because a horse will always view a dog with skepticism.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
An adult horse. Now, a new colt will look at a dog and go, cool, somebody to play with. But humans, because, you know, we're talking about humans. I'm hoping they're listening to some of this.
Mm-hmm.
We mirror what our parents teach us. The great apes, the horses, the dogs, they all do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, they're acting like this is a scary thing, so I got to act like this is a scary thing too. But like you said, a newborn, a two-year-old, ooh, something new.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes back to that whole safety thing. It's like, oh, mom doesn't think this is safe, so it must not be safe. Whereas a lot of us, it's just, this is new. Ouch, that burns. Okay,
yeah.
That's how I discovered fire. You know? And sometimes I think we need to get to that place where we are teachable.
Yeah.
And yes, the media plays on it. The politicians play on it. Our parents played on it.
Advertising.
Society plays
God.
On it. Yeah. You know, and until I get to the point where I can walk in and buy whatever vehicle I want to in cash, I'm middle class or lower class. Because I just can't go down to the corner market and pick up a Learjet.
Get out of here. Well, doggone it. I was led wrong by you. I thought you were like that.
Well, don't believe everything I tell you. I might be wrong. Anyway. But yeah, you know, and that's until we get that curiosity going and use the curiosity more than we use the fear, I think we're stuck.
Yeah.
Because
and then we
it's like
there was this this person who I was doing rounds. I don't know if you know, I worked for several years as a chaplain in the hospital. And you have floors and you make rounds. And there was this one guy who I was on a ward where people were terminal, and he was in tears, and that wasn't unusual. That wasn't anything to be alarmed about or anything like that, but it's something to be with the person. And it turned out that, and this was years ago, it turned out that this guy was maybe in his 70s, 80s, somewhere in there. You know, after you get to a certain age, which might not be a bad thing. You don't, like when you're in your 20s, oh, she looks like she's 20. And you're in your 30s, he slipped over into the 30s and then the 40s. Then by the time you get in the 50s, 60s, 70s, they're old. So
yeah.
He was somewhere in there. And he was very distraught. So sat and talked with him. Turned out that he kept mentioning his best friend, that he had a best friend when he was a kid, and he was wondering whatever happened to him. I didn't get to see him, blah, blah, blah. It turned out that this guy was dealing with the first time he ran into racism, because his friend, he was white, and his friend was black. And they were friends from knee high. They would go out and play and everything. And then when he got in, he said, when he got into high school, his father sat him down and said, you're going to have to dump your friend. I don't want your friend coming back over here. Because I'm going to be blunt.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because I don't want no nigger girl being brought up here, and I don't want you coming back with one. So you need to get rid of your friend. And that devastated him. And he said he got beat. He didn't do it right off the bat. That man lived with that. And this, I'm saying this because I think we're all in these different bubbles where we can't reach each other. He carried that around with him to his deathbed. He died not long after he shared that story. And he said he had never talked about it before. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps us from being able to connect. It interferes with that process. It really does.
And that's where I go back to my story where it's like human beings are balloons.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't able to release that pressure until just before he died. Isn't that sad? Yeah. I mean, that's a scar that goes to the bone or deeper.
It is. Yeah.
And it's like, what made that feel so unsafe that he could never let that go? And see, that's a crime. If there is somebody in charge of the universe, they can make somebody pay for that.
Mm.
But remembering the show Lucifer, it's like, you know, sometimes we create our own hells.
Yeah, a lot of times we do.
And, yeah. You know, We sentence ourselves to live in this hell until whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, how big of a payment is that for having one little black friend that you played with until you were told, no, they're wrong.
Yeah. I carry him around with me. I do. And I think that's part of what happens when I get curious about why, if I have whatever reaction it is, good or bad. Because I know there's a way that you can really multiply. You can multiply what people call good, or you can multiply what people call bad in this world. And that's something, it feels as though the multiplication on the bad side has overtaken the good. That's how it feels right now, because there's so much coming to the surface. And I see that as a good thing, because we see it now. And that means it's out in the open, and we can actually purge ourselves from it. And we're not carrying it around as not as many of us are carrying it around and taking it to our deathbed, and maybe sometimes not even having released then, you know, because sometimes you get chaplains or ministers who are more focused on certain prayers you say and certain rituals that you do at this time, and that loses the individual, one, I think, and two, that puts the focus someplace else. And
yeah, and you know, distraction can be as big an addiction as heroin.
Oh, that's true. That's so true.
How many times do we see people that are addicted to their cell phones rather than talking to somebody?
Yeah.
Or they sit and watch TV, or they eat all day long, or,
yeah,
you know, whatever they do to distract themselves away from whatever they're feeling.
Or they're online looking to hook up, trying to find somebody to hook up with.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what? It's like, what's that?
We're kind of running out of time. We got maybe a minute and a half. We always do this. Yeah, it was an hour. Every time I add 30 minutes to it, and then we keep going. One of these days we're going to do it all day.
Well, I enjoy talking to you ladies, so.
But I really...
You got to be in charge of telling me to shut up.
No, I want to hear what you have to say, too. But I also don't want us to get cut. Like...
Yeah.
Bam. Okay, you're gone. But,
okay,
yeah.
I'll see you next time.
hold on. Thank you so much
okay.
for being here. Thank you. I really appreciate what you do and what you just did today. You put a smile on my face. And I think we did some really good work and pulled out some important points for people to think about.
I think I have to agree with you.
Yeah. So I love you. You know I do. And you know I love you.
Yep.
So I'm
going to
say goodbye.
You right back, lady. Okay. Goodbye.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all I have today. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. This has been Illusion of Difference, I as Creator, with your host, Alondis Lake. Join us again. Continue to learn how to take charge in every situation, every challenge.